So, good morning, everybody. We're going to come to order. Welcome to the meeting of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees. Our first order of business is approval of the proposed agenda. Could I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The agenda is approved. Next is approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the December 17, 2021 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstention? The minutes are approved. We will now move to public participation. Board Secretary Eric Scorzoni.
Thank you, President Stanley. We will now proceed to the public participation portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. Any responses from board members will come during the trustee comment portion of the meeting. We will now hear from Kyle Shoemaker, followed by Kate Birdsall.
Morning, this is Kyle.
Hi, Kyle. You're connected to the Board of Trustees meeting.
Thank you, Kyle.
Okay,
go
great.
Ahead.
Am I good to go then?
You're good to go. 3 minutes. Thank
morning.
You.
Morning. Okay. Good morning. It is regrettable but necessary that I return once again to implore this board to revisit the university's handling of complaints to the ethics hotline. Little progress has occurred in regards to my complaint since I addressed this board on December 17th. What has occurred is alarming. Responses posted to this complaint by the university in December have now proven to be untruthful. The individual assigned to investigate this complaint, who is now named in the complaint, thus far refuses to recuse herself despite having an obvious conflict of interest. When I requested this individual escalate the matter to her boss due to an obvious conflict of interest, I was sarcastically told President Stanley does not have time to meet with you. Since President Stanley lacks the time to hear concerns about his direct report's performance, I respectfully request at least one member of the board, or failing that, at least one member of the media, step forward and schedule a 15-minute meeting with me to review how handling of this complaint has been botched. If you believe it is acceptable to take 39 days from the day the complaint is filed to you and confirm receipt, so be it. If you think it's acceptable to take 98 days to even follow up requesting additional information offered from day one needed to investigate it, so be it. If you think it's acceptable to promise to schedule a meeting in early January and then fail to do so, so be it. If you think it's acceptable for President Stanley to bury his head in the sand and sarcastically not have time to hear concerns about his direct reports, so be it. But if you happen to see room for improvement in this timeline and procedure, I hope you will join me in demanding change. I look forward to hearing from you. I will send each of you a follow-up email momentarily. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Kate Birdsall.
Good morning. It's nice to see some of you again and to address some of you for the first time. My name is Dr. Kate Birdsall. I'm an associate teaching professor in the Department of Writing, Rhetoric, and American Cultures, the home of First Year Writing, a program that reaches nearly all of every incoming freshman class. I'm here today, however, in my capacity as the president of the Union of Non-Tenure Track Faculty, or UNTF. UNTF represents roughly one-third of faculty at MSU, and we serve as the primary undergraduate educators on campus, especially for introductory classes taken by freshmen and sophomores. We serve as the students' first introduction to MSU's academic community. We teach the classes that introduce students to their eventual majors, spark their intellectual curiosity, and put them on the path to becoming lifelong Spartans. This spring, we will be negotiating a new collective bargaining agreement with the university, and we have high hopes for that agreement. As our members love teaching at Michigan State, we love our students, and we love starting them on their Spartan journey and helping them to reach graduation and become alumni. Although most of us hold terminal degrees, we are dedicated career teachers. We believe in point one of the mission of this university, which is to provide outstanding education to promising qualified students in order to prepare them to contribute fully to society. We believe. Unfortunately, we aren't sure that Michigan State believes in us. Our union has a relatively high turnover rate, as the university has not done the human resources work to institute a hire-to-retire life cycle aimed at retaining top non-tenure-track talent. For example, in most departments, there are few concrete policies governing non-tenure-track workload, promotion, or academic governance, and our salaries are abysmal. Our members' love for teaching and for the university is thus stymied by an institution that doesn't acknowledge us as the consummate professionals, teachers, mentors, and stewards of MSU that we are. We, the career teachers, are expendable. The majority of our proposals this bargaining cycle aim to correct that and help to make MSU the destination employer that we all want it to be. Most of our proposals won't cost anything. Requiring departments and colleges to outline workload policies, et cetera, are all free to the university and go a long way toward helping to retain top talent. Fulfilling President Stanley's desire to make MSU a destination employer will also require offering competitive non-tenure track salaries. Our salaries are not competitive in the Big Ten and will never be a destination employer, nor will we retain the best educators and thus provide the world-class education we all want to offer at the current pay rate. Therefore, we have a salary proposal that we believe is in the best interest of our members, our students, and the institution. Thank you.
Next, we have Patrick Munley, followed by Sophia Balow.
May I take off my mask while speaking? No? Okay. Good morning. I'm Pat Munley, father of Elizabeth Thomas and John Munley, all alumni of MSU. Thomas and John both swam for MSU as Chair Emeritus and President Emeritus of Counselor Education and Counseling Psychology at West Michigan University, and as a former Chair of the Michigan Board of Counseling, I'm familiar with university operations and the importance of board responsibility. I'm here to request this board exercises general supervision responsibility and direct university leadership to meaningfully reevaluate and reconsider the decision to eliminate the swimming and diving program. I know from personal experience it's possible to change the university decision when it's the right thing to do. In 2001, after swimming for MSU for 4 years, our son John passed away suddenly while jogging on Harrison Road. To continue part of the MSU family, established a legacy for John, the family established John Munley Morris Swink Scholarship to remember him and support MSU in perpetuity. In the years immediately after John passed, his mother Marion became disheartened that MSU would not award John's degree. Every year around graduation time, she would see national news stories about families of students who died tragically at other universities being given posthumous degrees. Often in tears, she would ask, why won't MSU do this for John? In early 2006, we began formal attempts to have MSU award John's degree. The answer continued to be no. In April 2007, I wrote President Simon requesting and detailing the reasons John's degree should be awarded. A few months later, the provost informed me that the posthumous degree could not be awarded. However, a special task force would be established to review and reconsider the issue. A few months later, MSU shared the good news. The decision had been reversed, and John's degree would be awarded in May 2008. After a long and painful effort, this outcome restored my faith in MSU and the people who lead it. The fact that John's degree was awarded after 7 years has always been a reminder to me that it's never too late to do the right thing. Unfortunately, my faith in MSU was shaken again when I learned the decision in late October 2020 to eliminate the swimming and diving program. When I talked to my wife that day, she simply said, it's like our John has died a second time in MSU. I believe this decision allowed to stand. It will continue to undermine the faith, trust, and credibility of MSU. There was no transparency, no public involvement, and no approval by the Board of Trustees. Just a sudden announcement in the middle of the fall semester that the program was terminated at the end of the season. Students wishing to continue competing should go elsewhere. In reviewing the board's minutes for 1 year prior to the announcement, I found no recommendations to the board or even discussions by the board for approval to discontinue the swimming and diving program. I find it incredible that a major program, one of the top 25 of all time, which has been an integral part of the university, its community, and its legacy for nearly 100 years, was discontinued in this inexplicable manner without board approval. This is not the way to treat students and families who entrust MSU with their life's hopes and dreams. I believe Michigan State University is better than this. I strongly encourage this board to exercise its general supervision responsibility and direct the university leadership to meaningfully reevaluate and reconsider the decision to terminate the swimming and diving program. It's never too late to do the right thing. Go green. Thank you.
Go white.
Thank you. Sophia Balow, followed by Peter Corsetti.
Good morning, President Stanley and Board of Trustees. My name is Sophia Balo. I'm a junior in the Broad College of Business studying marketing, and I used to be a member of the MSU swimming and diving team. As you can imagine, it is quite difficult for me to fit everything I would like to say to you into a three-minute speech, but I will do my best to cover what most of us have been feeling for the last year and a half. When I was 17 years old, I made a commitment to myself to continue my swimming career competing at the highest level in the Big Ten Conference. I was never sold on swimming in college. In fact, I was quite against it. But upon my arrival to campus, I knew I had found my home. I chose MSU over other great schools because it was the perfect combination of top-level academics and athletics. I had a great freshman year, dropping time in almost all my events, and I was excited to continue competing in the years to come, as I had goals of placing in the Big Ten Championship and breaking team records. But unfortunately, in October 2020, I was stripped of each and every one of those opportunities. The only way I can describe it to you is that it felt like someone took out a part of my soul and stomped on it right in front of me. I wish I could tell myself back then that what was to come would not remedy that piece of my soul that was missing, but rather leave me constantly searching to find it. After being stripped of our passion, we were met with door after door slammed in our face. We, to this day, have never gotten answers as to why we were treated the way that we were, and we continue to be met with doors in our face, even after offering solutions, money, and opportunities to collaborate. Do you know what that feels like? To sit at the IM West pool every day as a lifeguard, staring at our record board, our signs, and our locker room, knowing what could have been. To be met with a completely unsympathetic administration who offers empty promises, even though we have had complete strangers offer their encouragement and support after what has happened to us. To see MSU actively planning for a new rec center and pool without a swimming and diving team. It is disappointing to know that a great land-grant institution such as Michigan State does not care enough about a group of paying students to even sit them down, look them in the eyes, and explain the rationale behind a decision that stripped them of their dream. For a university that prides itself on solving society's biggest problems through collaboration and open discussion, I would hope that our situation would be no different. From a young age, we are always taught to do the right thing. We are taught that sometimes it will be hard and you'll be met with obstacles, but in the face of adversity, what is important is that you stay true to what you believe in and fight for what is right. Our situation offers you a golden opportunity to do so. Contrary to the false narrative that we've dissipated from campus, you can see for yourself that we are, in fact, all still here. We still stand at the ready to enter our beloved pool as soon as we're given the green light to do so. We love MSU Swim and Dive, and we've proven that thousands of other people do too. Please don't overlook our passion, as it is never too late to do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter Corsetti, followed by Noah Doderlein.
Hello. My name is Peter Corsetti. I'm a current junior here at MSU, and previously I was on the swimming and diving team. I'm honored to stand before you today on behalf of my teammates and distinguished swimming and diving alumni to demonstrate why we deserve to continue representing Michigan State University. At Michigan State, we say Spartans will. Spartans will persevere, Spartans will endure, and Spartans will excel. This group you see here today has embodied and illustrated just that. Throughout the past 16 months, we fought and preserved in every way to save this historic program. To name a few examples, we gathered pledges and endowments totaling over $11 million. We created a social media movement of over 7,000 followers. We have gathered nearly 6,000 signatures for reinstatement, and we voiced our perspectives at each Board of Trustees meeting since October of 2020. Within swimming and diving, there are many rich traditions, traditions that have been molded and created by this family since the inception of this legendary 99-year-old program. And notice I said family, a family that spans from current team members to the alumni. A family that misses varsity Michigan State swimming and diving. Mudita encompasses this feeling of family. Mudita is a Buddhist term that means having unbridled joy at others' success. This was integrated in our team's values through recognition of selfless acts to celebrate fellow teammates' achievements in and out of the pool. In addition to Mudita, after Big Ten championships in late February, the members of the Big Ten team have the choice of getting the Spartan head tattoo. This tattoo has been a tradition of the team for many years and is very recognizable on the pool deck. For many, there are two aspects that help describe the meaning behind the tattoo. The first is brotherhood. after years of tough workouts and late nights that have taught us discipline that we will take us with us forever. There are no other people that I would rather call my brothers and teammates than the people behind me. Second is pride. We display this by being the best Spartan role models we can be, by excelling in the classroom and devoting ourselves to our sport. There are many kids out there that aspire to be Spartan swimmers in one day and earn that tattoo. I truly don't want that dream to die out, especially because as of right now, we are not able to pass on these traditions. Our team's traditions extend beyond just the pool. Despite the elimination of our team, our belief in giving back to the community has persisted. Many members sitting here today displayed our team's Spartan pride in continuing to represent our team as volunteers at the Salvation Army during the holiday season this year. A historic 99-year program should not be given up on so easily. We are here, we are ready, and we can help. There is still a viable team, as you can see. We are all Spartans. We should not give up on one another. Spartans fight, and Spartans will overcome any obstacle. Thank you for your time, and thank you to everyone that has supported us over the many months. Go Green.
Bye-bye. Noah Doderline, followed by Madeline Toko.
Good morning, President Stanley and Board of Trustees. My name is Noah Doderline. I'm a junior here at Michigan State and a member of the MSU Sunrise Movement. You may recognize our group from our last appearance at your meeting in October 2021 when we requested your full transparency and commitment to divesting from fossil fuel companies. Today, we have returned with four new speakers to reemphasize the urgency of this moment to end our university's support of extractive and destructive industries. Now, please don't get us wrong. We know that the university has made some headway in this regard. Some of your efforts to decarbonize our campus and your portfolio have been true steps in combating the climate crisis. Expanding our sustainable infrastructure, like our extensive solar array and the decision to end the use of coal for fossil fuel for electricity production in 2016, have been major components to making progress. Additionally, in a letter that you sent to the MSU Divestment Coalition in March of 2020, signed by Trustee Byram, you noted that since 2018, MSU has not made any new real asset fund investment into companies whose primary business is the exploration or extraction of fossil fuels, which is commendable. However, what concerns me and the rest of my colleagues the most in that letter is the following sentence where you state, and I quote, "The university already has begun divesting from any private fund partnerships in this area where the university is a limited partner, and we will continue to do so as expeditiously as possible and in a fashion that is prudent and financially responsible," end quote. Those are some pretty bold claims, which you assured us that you were fulfilling after our comments in October. But in our review of the university's investment disclosures, we find it hard to believe that your model of divestment truly is as expeditious as you claim. While you may view this as a matter of semantics and subjectivity, your financial statements speak for themselves. The millions that the university holds in stocks of Marathon Oil, plus capital investment funds like NCAP Energy, and dozens more whose meager commitments to renewables are far outweighed by their involvement in fossil fuels, would indicate to us that your actions are neither expeditious nor financially responsible. Particularly in the face of the overwhelming evidence of climate change's disastrous impacts on both our planet and the economy. Ask yourself honestly, what do you gain from this incrementalist approach besides short-term financial stability threatened by the very systems from which you derive it? We're here today because we are tired. Tired of empty platitudes and lethargic commitments. Tired of frontline communities in Michigan and across the world disproportionately impacted by the climate crisis being ignored because doing so potentially challenges capital accumulation. And we are tired of being told that institutional change is only possible when it is immediately profitable. This university's recent history of lack of transparency and accountability compels us to speak our conscience. We've come back to you in good faith, asking for full and immediate divestment, to fulfill your obligations as public servants. No direct investments, new or old. No indirect investment behind the veil of venture capital proxies, and a charge to reinvest that money back into our community. The time to divest is now.
Madeline Toko, followed by Eli Foltz.
Good morning. Welcome to Accountability. I am here in front of you today, along with my colleagues, because you've fallen short in discharging your duties. To our understanding, this university is both directly and indirectly investing in fossil fuels as we speak. Based on public information that was presented to this board in 2018, 2% of our funds will be invested in fossil fuels, and we cannot afford to remove that until 2031. For reference, we have $18.8 million invested in NCAP, which does directly invest in fossil fuels, along with massive polluters like Enbridge, who are currently drowning Mississippi catfish in oil. And it sure as heck isn't finger-licking good. Why? Is it because you're afraid of losing money? That's awfully rich coming from you. You've invested $30 million into the new STEM building and another $35 million into adding on to the music building. As far as we know, this is about the same as what you're putting into your so-called intractable investment. You're betting on the wrong horse. You're betting on shale, tar sands, and offshore bums. Oh, dear. I'm so sorry. I meant oil rigs, which will crumble beneath you, explode in your face, and suck us all down in the next 20 years. May I remind you that while you may not be beholden to large corporations, you are beholden to us. And if I was in your shoes, I'd bet on us. While it is irrefutably true that MSU is implicated in investments against nature, we do not know the full scale or scope of the stains on this institution. Without transparency, there can be no true accountability. And without transparency, you are choosing chaos over community. Thank you.
Eli Foltz, followed by Savitri Anantharatham.
Trustees, my name is I'm a freshman and a member of the Sunrise Movement at Michigan State University. I'm here today to show my support towards the movement towards divestment at MSU. We have repeatedly called on MSU and its board of trustees to divest completely from fossil fuels, and will continue to do so until appropriate action is taken in a timely manner. If the University of Michigan can divest from fossil fuels, can't we, because we're a green school after all? Divestment has widespread support. It is not a new topic of concern. It is important to recognize the efforts put towards this movement by past students and organizations such as Divest MSU, Reclaim MSU, the Sunrise Movement, ASMSU, and the Faculty Senate. Specifically with ASMSU, there has been several bills and proposals that are linked to climate action, sustainability, and divestment. ASMSU Bill 5789 calls for divestment from fossil fuels. Bill 5745 shows ASMSU is committed to declaring a climate emergency and asks the university to do the same. And Bill 5744 asks for transparency and student representation on the investment subcommittee, which was rejected by the board even after being watered down. And the Sunrise Movement at Michigan State has taken heightened action and increased good faith efforts in the past few months to reach our goal of divestment. We created a petition calling on the MSU Board of Trustees to divest from fossil fuels, which has gotten over 500 signatures in the last 2 weeks from concerned parents, students, and faculty members. We spread flyers across campus with links to the petition and information on why divestment is important. We also started a social media campaign with student testimonials on why divestment is important to them. And then most recently, we had a successful teach-in where several dozen attendees listened to students, professors, and local activists to speak on the harms of investing in fossil fuels. There has been mass community support, and it is unfair for you to sit here and not heed our calls and demands while we watch as you fund the destruction of our planet. You all are in an ethically indefensible position. All of our futures, as well as the future of our planet, are no longer promised to us. Though past efforts by the university towards becoming an energy efficient and more sustainable campus and the baby steps towards divestment are greatly appreciated, it is realistically and simply not enough. If we are not out of time yet, we are truly on the brink of running out of time. So now is the time to take action to ensure a quality future for us, the Spartan community as a whole, and the planet. Next, you'll hear from a colleague of mine, another Sunrise organizer, Savitri, on a moral argument for divesting. Thank you.
Savitri Anandaram, followed by Pandaya, Sharia Pandaya.
Good morning, President Stanley and trustees. My name is Savitri Anandaraman. I'm a first-year student at MSU and an organizer with the Sunrise Movement Hub on campus. Today, our hub has been charged with the task of, in 3 minutes each, convincing this body to pull its remaining investments in fossil fuels and begin investing in a just and livable future. My colleagues have already shared our exact reasons for being here today, that we were dismissed at the last boarding meeting we attended as having our facts wrong, that students and the larger MSU community are demanding more transparency and divestment from this body, and finally, that we're running out of time. I'm so proud of the steps that MSU has already taken to divest from dirty energy, but ending new fossil fuel investments simply isn't the end game here. The climate crisis we face is decades in the making and won't be solved by proceeding with business as usual. Blocking new investments in companies like Marathon Oil doesn't account for the pollution of our communities that MSU has been complicit in for years. Bankrolling fewer fossil fuel companies than before is still bankrolling fossil fuel companies. Divesting expeditiously on MSU's timeline has been too slow, and it's far out of line with the mandates of today's climate science. This is my first year at MSU, but I began organizing for climate action as a sophomore in high school. It started out as a kind of side gig because I was so anxious about this crisis. But quickly, I found myself pivoting from 8 hours of school to 8+ hours of Zoom calls and meetings, organizing actions and campaigns with my friends. I've missed classes and days of school. I've missed gatherings with friends and meals with my family. I do this work not because I'm antisocial or love skipping school, but because I have hope that we can all share in a future that is just and equitable and livable. A future where Michigan State is a true partner in the fight for environmental justice. But every day that MSU profits from the exploitation of our land, that future seems bleaker. Every day that this body finds even the idea of funding the poisoning of our people bearable, that future fades. You have an obligation to Spartans, future, present, and past, to divest and do so expeditiously, as you've promised before. It's time to take responsibility. It's time to take action. We're running out of time. Thank you.
Sharia Pandia, followed by Randy Soma. Sharia Pandia. Randy Soma, followed by James Phelan.
President Stanley, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I was a corporate officer and president of the global operations at Johnson Controls, a Fortune 100 company. I was responsible for annual sales of $20 billion, 256 facilities in 26 countries, and 75,000 employees. At Johnson Controls, the leadership team decided the most powerful way to earn the trust of our people would be by making a commitment to operate through our stated core values and not around them. In other words, walk our talk. We proved that being true to our values and meeting our business objectives were not mutually exclusive. I've served on many boards as a chairman, vice chairman, and board member. What struck me as consistent across all of those organizations were two things. First, they all had published core values and almost never referred to them when making decisions. Second, There were almost always victims of those decisions, usually people in the organization they claimed to value and care about. In the end, however, they were treated as nothing more than a line item on an accounting spreadsheet. I often wondered, how do these so-called leaders sleep at night? My answer to that question inspired me to author a book in 2016 that presented the case that our country's leadership culture was such that wrong has morphed into acceptable, and with that, right has become simply inconvenient. I have a quote in my book that I use to coach young professionals. Talent and character don't emerge when you decide what you're willing to do. They emerge when you decide what, under any circumstances, you're absolutely not willing to do. MSU's decision to discontinue the men and women's varsity swimming and diving programs is a narrative I've seen many times before. In attempting to understand this decision, I first looked at the MSU values. I saw integrity. Integrity is choosing courage over comfort, choosing what is right over what is easy, and choosing to practice core values rather than simply profess them. Another value I saw was excellence in education. In team sports, student athletes learn life lessons that will shape them far more than anything measured in their GPA. Things like work ethic necessary to achieve excellence, team over self, how to handle failure, and more importantly, how to handle success. So this decision clearly demonstrates that MSU professes its values but does not practice them. So much for integrity. In May of last year, my alma mater, Robert Morris University, announced that they were terminating the men and women's varsity hockey programs. As a member of the university's Board of Trustees, I met with the president to see if I could accept the reasoning that led to the decision with such terrible consequences. Subsequently, I resigned from the board. President Stanley, this is not about swimming and diving. This is about people whose passions and pride were ambushed, people who trusted that you would never treat them like a line item on a spreadsheet. So I hope that you are a leader with the strength and courage to admit your mistake, and driven by your integrity, honor, and MSU's values, immediately take action to reinstate those programs. Thank you.
James Phelan, followed by Kate Dombrowski.
Good morning. I'm Jim Phelan. I'm from Alexandria, Virginia. I feel like we're pen pals at this point, but I wanted to come up and take the chance to speak with you in person because, as you've heard, President Stanley has refused to collaborate with those of us who want to find a different solution to whatever problem it was that led to the termination of varsity swim and dive. And I'm here to ask the board to make sure that MSU lives up to the Spartans Will ideal. Now, I didn't show it because you don't like signs in the meeting, and I get that, but my daughter's acceptance letter was literally wrapped in a Spartans Will flag. As a parent of a high school kid, that was pretty impressive. When I went to admissions and I first heard, who will? Spartans will. That says a lot. I've taken a look at your website, and your website tells us that Spartans are driven to make a difference, forward-looking and open to new ideas. We collaborate to generate new solutions and serve as partners to make the world a better place. You can find the Spartans Will video on YouTube that extols unconventional thinking. It tells us that we can solve the world's toughest problems if we're willing to work harder, push farther, and form true partnerships. Members of the board, I'm not trying to solve one of the world's hardest problems. I just want collaboration to find a different solution to whatever problem caused President Stanley to terminate a program that Michigan State had supported through thick and thin for 99 years. A program whose student athletes routinely carry among the highest GPAs of any swim teams in the country. And President Stanley, 2020, after you cut them, the women had the highest GPA and the men were number 6. Aren't those kids entitled, aren't they entitled to a true partnership? Aren't they entitled to us to work harder? Unfortunately, board members, this is where you come in, and I've been a lawyer for 30 years. I understand that board members don't get involved in the day-to-day. I understand giving President Stanley a chance to work with us, but he hasn't taken it. Time's running out. Time for waiting and seeing is over. My daughter plans to be here for 4 years. That's half of one of your terms. the end of the semester, she'll have two left. The seniors have lost their senior season. The time for Spartansville is now. We can't play the long game. Michigan State tells the world that Spartans are collaborative change agents, but those words don't make it so. Partnering with your alums, with your students, with their parents, that makes it so. We have a chance to make this a case study in Spartansville. We have a chance to tell the world that the flag that came in the mail is not just marketing. I know it's customary to end this by saying, go green. I want to ask that question that I heard in the admissions office 3 years ago. Who will? Thank you.
Kate Dombrowski, followed by Mason Vore.
Members of the board, thank you for your time today. I'm coming to you again as a student, a representative of Students Against Gun Violence, and as someone who has lost a family member to gun violence. This is a deeply personal issue to me. What we are asking the board to do is not radical, progressive, or an infringement on anyone's rights. We're simply asking you to catch up to the rest of the state. I'd like to tell you a story because I personally lived the fear and discomfort of guns in schools. When I was 13, Joshua Wade, the same man who is currently challenging U of M's gun policy, brought a gun to my middle school choir concert. It was truly a terrifying day for everyone there. And even though he did not intend to harm anyone, the very presence of a deadly weapon made people deeply anxious, and rightfully so. It is impossible to separate the countless stories of school shootings from a situation where a gun is present in a school at a school function. And because of that incident, the Ann Arbor Public Schools banned firearms on school property to create a safer environment for their students. And they suffered the consequences. They were willing to take a risk and stick their neck out to keep their community safe. They spent years fighting in court to do so. We aren't even asking you to do that. You don't have to risk anything. Someone else has already taken that risk. We're just asking you to have a shred of courage and follow in their footsteps. Students deserve to live, learn, and work on a safe and fear-free campus. Our current policy is deeply flawed and far behind every other university in the state. This university operates under the slogan, Spartans Will. The word will used as both a noun and a verb. And so a single question remains. Do you have the will, the courage, the determination to keep your students safe? And will you change the MSU firearms policy? Thank you for your time.
Mason Vore, followed by Maria McKenzie.
Hello, members of the board. Thank you for your time. My name is Mason Vore, and I'm a third-year student at MSU and a member of Students Against Gun Violence. We're here to speak about the flaws in the aforementioned MSU firearms policy that allow guns on campus. MSU's current firearms policy presents a danger to students and faculty on campus by allowing a loophole for certain visitors on our campus to carry firearms. I'm here alongside other members of our organization to demand its closure. Part of the reason this loophole exists is due to the complex nature of Michigan's firearms policy. I'd like to take the time to articulate this to y'all. The loophole comes from Section 18.01 of the university's ordinances that states that, except as permitted by state law regulating firearms, no person shall possess any firearm or weapon anywhere upon property governed by the board. The phrase, except as permitted by state law, defers our university policy to Michigan Firearms Act 372 of 1927. This act defines weapons-free zones, which include schools. However, this statute only applies to CPL, or concealed pistol license, holders carrying a concealed pistol. Therefore, a person with a valid CPL may carry an unconcealed pistol in weapons-free zones, including our campus. We seek to amend the loophole by stipulating no person shall possess any firearm or weapons anywhere upon property governed by the board, regardless of whether the individual has a concealed license or is otherwise authorized by law to possess, discharge, or use any such device. This language closes the loophole that allows visitors to bring guns onto our campus and provides a basic safety assurance that our university has lacked for so long. Thank you.
Maria McKenzie, followed by Travis Nitkovich.
Good
Good morning, everyone. Hello, members of the board. Thank you for your time this chilly morning. My name is Mara McKenzie. Don't worry, it happens. And I am a third-year student and a member of Students Against Gun Violence. I would like to address the university's administration's implications that they are waiting for the Michigan Supreme Court to make a decision in the case of Wade v. University of Michigan before changing our firearms policy. There is no logical reason to wait for this decision. The Wade v. University of Michigan case was filed to challenge the U of M policy banning firearms on property owned, leased, or controlled by the university. However, this case was dismissed by the Court of Claims in November of 2015. When it was brought up again in the Michigan Court of Appeals, the majority upheld U of M's firearms ban. In fact, the Court of Appeals has published this opinion, making it a precedent-setting decision that should be treated as law. We should respect the power of the Court of Appeals and act within the bounds of the current laws. Moreover, the Michigan Supreme Court has already ruled on a parallel case. In 2019, the Michigan Supreme Court ruled that K-12 school districts could ban firearms on school property. It is absurd to wait to change our firearm policy just because there is a possibility this law might change, especially when the Supreme Court has demonstrated support for similar decisions in the past. There is a threat to this campus today, and it is neglecting your responsibility to wait when the current law establishes unequivocally we have the legal right to keep our campus safe. Waiting for the law to potentially change is absurd and nothing more than an excuse to not make the decision you were all elected to make. If legal precedent is not enough to compel you, there are also the policies of every other university in the state of Michigan. We are the only one in this state that still defers to state law in our firearms policy. If it was truly logical to wait for the Supreme Court, we would be in good company. But instead, we have fallen behind our peers and stand alone. This board should be embarrassed that we are in this position. Refusing to make this simple policy change has no legal basis and puts us far behind the curve for the safety of our community. I implore the board, use your legal right and keep this school safe. Change our policy to expressly state that weapons are prohibited on this campus. We've been waiting far too long. Do not wait for this decision. Do not wait one more second. Thank you.
Travis Nitkovich, followed by Dr. Lawrence Stawick.
Hello, members of the Board of Trustees. My name is Travis Nitkovich, and my objective today is to clearly illustrate Michigan State's athletic budgeting and to discuss its potential going forward. I will list various facts and events related to Michigan State's athletic budget to showcase how well MSU is actually doing. To start off, the last time before COVID that this athletic department ran a deficit was the 2013-14 fiscal year. At that time, I was in middle school. The department did indeed run a deficit this past fiscal year due to COVID, but that deficit will become a $7.2 million surplus with a return to normal ticket revenues. Continuing, perhaps the best news for Michigan State of the pandemic, Matt Ishbia donated $32 million to the athletic department. Furthermore, the Rocket Mortgage sponsorship was extended for another 5 years, as well as a new partnership created with Caesars Sportsbook. Additionally, donors helped fund much of Mel Tucker's $95 million football contract. Also, there's now a student rec fee being assessed for the entire student body, like myself, to pay for new facilities, which will only benefit athletics. And finally, any and all university holdings that track the financial markets in any way should be up considerably after this past year that was great for the markets. With all this good news and the clear path forward for the budget from the COVID years, where does the athletic department put its budget? The answer, of course, is to allocate the budget back to swimming and diving, a program that only made up 1.5% of the athletic budget in the first place, but still has athletes on campus ready to go, coaches still here, and most importantly, has over $11 million in pledges and endowments. This program deserves to be brought back. Not to mention, this program with only about 25 scholarship athletes compared to around 40 walk-ons actually brings in over $1 million annually to the university, primarily via tuition. And how much are all of us worth? What number do we represent on a balance sheet? And how about the value that we bring to Michigan State outside of the pool, whether that's in the classroom or with our academic performance or with our outreach and service in the community? The question begs, why not? Why not bring back this team with all this money raised, a bright future both with new facilities and athletic budgeting, and a current team still here ready to go? Why not reinstate swimming and diving? You, the Board of Trustees, have this power. We are still here. We're ready to swim. We just need you to make it happen. Do the right thing. Let's make Spartan Athletics whole again. Thank you.
Dr. Lawrence Stawick, followed by Brenda Amon.
A lot of tension here. First of all, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Dr. Lawrence Stawick, MD. I graduated from Michigan State University in 1970, went to Wayne State University Medical School, and did my internal medicine, another university down the road here in Ann Arbor. I've been teaching clinical medicine and gastroenterology for 42 years at Ascension Providence Hospital, affiliated with Michigan State University and is the East Campus. As a clinical professor for Michigan State University, teaching and mentoring students, residents, and GI fellows, I feel it not only important to teach medicine, but to look for and convey these students and the importance of commitment, integrity, ethics, team play, and communication skills, which brings me to the point of why I drove 70 miles through this weather. I became very distressed and embarrassed over the past year as a Michigan State alumni and instructor after reading a multitude of articles how MSU, a major university in the country, eliminated the swim team. Every year, I interview numerous candidates for positions at the Michigan State University-affiliated gastroenterology program. And one of the first things I ask is whether the candidates have participated in extracurricular activities such as sports. The reason I do this, because I know if they have, I know they are team players, I know they are committed, I know they're, if confronted by an obstacle, they don't quit. And these kids have not quit. Actually, they're real leaders, aren't they? It is in my readings related to the Michigan State swim team, concerning funding and budgeting, etc., I realized the leadership took an easy way out. They dissolved the swim team instead of taking a harder pathway, that is to create solutions to saving the swim program. That's what real leaders do. They try to save. They don't quit. If you can't find a solution for one program, forget about wrestling or soccer or baseball. In fact, why don't you dissolve the whole athletic programs? I understand budgeting. I do funding and budgeting to get technology equipment into my hospital. I come against obstacles, but we overcome that. We find creative ways to do that. Dr. Stanley, the board, you are leaders. You are leaders in the university, the community, and the state of Michigan. I know you're intelligent enough, you have the fortitude, you have the talent, you have the resources. I'm sure you can discover and create a solution to save this program. That is what leaders do. And as far as what I'm concerned, these are leaders here, now, and in the future. Thank you.
Brenda Amon.
I can see I don't bleed green alone. Makes me think I'd like to come back at a happy time and come back and address the board. My name is Brenda Amon. It's good to be here in front of Dr. Stanley and the board today. I'm an MSU alum of Eli Broad before Eli Broad was Eli Broad, so that kind of dates me. I have two that graduated from the not-so-pretty school down south, and I have two here at MSU. One will graduate in the spring from James Madison, and the other one, Samuel Amon, is who I'm here about today. He's a sophomore. I guess you'd call him a first-generation Zoom kid. He has done a fantastic job, but he's made a mistake. He wasn't compliant with the COVID mandate. He knows there's no excuses. So what happened is he had his credits taken from him a couple days before classes were done in December. He got sick, and he didn't realize.
He didn't realize that he didn't need to wait 60 days to get the vaccine. So he's just confused. He's a student. He's 19. Again, he takes full responsibility. So I'm here because I bleed green like the rest of us. We are the only university in the state of Michigan that pulls back credits, that takes credits away from kids. All the other schools in the university, I've researched, they're not doing that. There's academic holds. There's Western has where they're charging kids $50 a week. I just think that the punishment for my son to lose a complete semester, along with some other students too, he's not the only one. He did exams. He didn't know what happened that he was wrong until a TA called him on the last day of school to let him know he couldn't put in his grade. So I am here because I am not sure that that's who we want to be. We talk about Together We Will. I hear everyone's passion in this room. And I don't think that I think what I think about this is think of an employer who has had an employee work for a month. In the last 2 days, the employer goes, oh, by the way, I'm not going to pay you for the month that you just worked. Like, I think there's something not fitting. And my son has reached out to, he even tried to talk to Dr. Stanley. I guess there was 15-minute appointments, and that was over, so he couldn't do that. He's tried to speak with Dr. Largent. He's done a lot. And so I'm here wanting us, now there's a date online that says by January 18th, the kids need to be vaccinated. And my son is vaccinated. He fits within that guideline. And I'm hoping that there's something done for these students. If we're about student success, I would think that we could review this situation. And other kids have been given grace, and I would like Samuel to have grace too. Thank you so much.
That's all, Mr. President.
So thank you so much, and I really want to, again, express my appreciation for everyone who spoke this morning. In my remarks today, I'm going to highlight some important partnerships and share how Michigan State University is working in Michigan communities to improve healthcare equity and outcomes. And among other updates, I want to discuss an important change to our faculty discipline policy coming before the board today, and I'll provide an update on the start of this semester. First, I want to acknowledge an important date in our history. Coming up tomorrow, the 167th anniversary of the establishment of Michigan State University. Together, we've come a long way over generations, but MSU has maintained our close connection to Michigan's people and commitment to Michigan's communities. It's a bond formed back when leaders first called for such an institution to nurture a more prosperous and a more competitive state. Serving every county through a broad range of extension services, medical education, research, and other partnerships, MSU continues to be a visionary and engaged engine of advancement for the students, families, and state of Michigan. Reflecting on our history can have great value. We must also continue to look for ways to advance knowledge and transform lives as we go forward. With the implementation of our strategic plans and a new year of accomplishments underway, our mission remains strong. I look forward to working closely with the board, our faculty and staff, our students, alumni, and stakeholders across the state and around the world to grow our impact in teaching and learning, research and innovation, and extension and outreach. When it comes to outreach, Michigan State University has literally grown up with Michigan communities such as Flint, which was incorporated as a city in the same year that Michigan State University was founded. MSU has been an active participant in the Flint area for more than a century. In partnership with the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, MSU has engaged with Flint Public Schools for over 50 years. And now, with the support of the Mott Foundation, we're expanding our highly successful model for education and service through our College of Human Medicine's public health program, which is based in MSU's downtown Flint campus. I want to thank the trustees, the mayor of Flint, and those who joined me recently to announce a $25 million Mott Foundation grant to Michigan State. This extension of our partnership with the foundation will allow us to add approximately 18 tenure-track faculty members to the public health program, including more than 8 endowed professorships. That will grow the public health program to more than 25 tenure-track faculty and about 70 faculty members in total, as MSU continues to make a difference for the people of Flint and Michigan. And an item on today's agenda will facilitate this through a lease for space in downtown Flint to house these research teams. In January, we observed the first anniversary of another transformational health partnership, this one with the Henry Ford Health System in Detroit. MSU joined Henry Ford in a 30-year collaboration to advance a new standard of health in Detroit and beyond. We look forward to making significant progress together. Our plans include building on our Joint Cancer Research Task Force and seeking designation as a comprehensive cancer center. We will also begin planning the design for a new research building near Henry Ford's Detroit campus. In this partnership, we are defining new paths for advancing equity in healthcare access and outcomes, particularly in cancer care. And we will explore pathways for opening healthcare careers to more young people from throughout Michigan. The development of online degree programs is another way MSU extends its services to people beyond our campus, and we recently received news of strong rankings for several online programs. The latest U.S. News and World Report rankings places four College of Education online programs in the top 10 of their categories, with curriculum and instruction rising to number one in the nation. MSU's online master's program in criminal justice ranked number five for the second year in a row, and our non-MBA online master's program in business jumped nine places to number 12. And the online master's in mechanical engineering program ranked number 14. I want to congratulate everyone associated with these programs on these very high rankings. Behind every MSU program are talented and engaged faculty and staff. The excellence of these scholars earned another form of validation with the naming of a new cohort of AAAS fellows that includes nine Michigan State University faculty members. The American Association for the Advancement of Science is the world's largest scientific society, and being named a AAAS fellow is a great distinction. Having nine faculty members named in 1 year ties Michigan State University's record. Having new fellows named in seven different disciplines attests to the breadth of MSU's research excellence. Also recently, a great honor came to a faculty member in a different form when President Joe Biden nominated economist and professor Lisa Cook to the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. Dr. Cook teaches in the College of Social Sciences Department of Economics and is also professor of international relations at James Madison College. If confirmed, she will be the first black woman to serve on the Fed in its 108-year history. I want to offer congratulations to Professor Cook, whose background, scholarly activity, and prior governmental experience make her an outstanding candidate for this very vital position. And this season, we say goodbye to another Spartan who has made a mark, MSU volleyball head coach Kathy George. Coach George announced her retirement after an impressive 35-season career, the last 17 coaching at MSU. She is our winningest volleyball coach, recording 302 wins at Michigan State. Coach George was the first woman to lead a team to the NCAA Division I Final Four and has guided her teams to 15 NCAA tournaments in all. We wish her well and thank her for her dedication to the sport and her players. And I want to give a warm welcome to our new volleyball head coach, Leah Johnson. She comes from us from Illinois State, where in her five seasons there, her teams made five postseason appearances, including four straight NCAA tournaments. I want to now provide an update on the start of our spring semester. I'm pleased to report we had a safe and solid start as we welcomed students back in person classes January 31st. I believe our decision to hold the first 3 weeks of the semester online helped mitigate the spread of the Omicron variant on campus and very importantly reduce the impact of absences in our classrooms and student success during these vital first 3 weeks. We're now seeing a significant drop in cases, although not yet to the pre-Omicron or Delta levels, but the trends are very, very encouraging. And we will continue to evaluate all of our campus health measures for their effectiveness and necessity as we progress in this semester. The safety of our community is a priority that extends to all who live, learn, work, and visit our campus and a point of continual study. As you know, we were saddened to join family and friends in announcing the recovery of missing Grand Valley State unit Brendan Santo a few weeks ago. As part of our response to this tragedy, we have been installing temporary fencing along the river for several weeks, starting at the Beale Street and West Circle Drive intersection, while we work on a more permanent solution to address concerns about safety along the Red Cedar River. The university is also actively replacing lighting across campus with brighter and more efficient LED bulbs to help our community feel safer. We regularly assess campus lighting every year, and we will continue to do so going forward. And we recently released a new mobile application called Safe MSU, which gives users access to a number of safety resources. A function called Friend Walk, for example, allows Spartans to share their current location with a friend who can follow their progress to the destination. As you know, February is Black History Month, acknowledging the struggles and recognizing the contributions and celebrating the successes of Blacks, Africans, and African Americans. I encourage everyone to take advantage of the special events on campus and online to help celebrate the month. Even as we celebrate Black History Month, we saw recent threats made against a number of historically Black colleges and universities. HBCUs have played an important role in American higher education and contribute to our own university's diversity, excellence, and success. Their alumni, including Professor Cook, are among the students in our graduates and professional degree programs, as well as among our faculty, staff, and executive leadership. I want to affirm that MSU stands in solidarity with HBCUs, and we believe no community should be subject to such menace. A threat against any institution of higher education is a threat against all of higher education. I next want to highlight an item on today's agenda that addresses concerns voiced by many across the university about our tenured faculty discipline and dismissal for cause policy. The policy update provides a standard timeline for handling discipline and adds clarity and transparency, as well as equity, across employee groups for violations. As fellow leaders and I told the campus community in an email this week, the policy is the outcome of a great amount of study from the Provost Discipline Process and Sanction Review Task Force, Academic Governance, and others, and I thank them for their engagement on this issue. I want to conclude today with the sad news we received last night of the passing of the former Michigan State University Chief of Police, Kelly Rodebush. Her distinguished career took her through the ranks to become the fifth chief of the MSU Police Department in January 2019, where she was the first woman to occupy that office. Very sadly, she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, leaving the department in July 2020 to focus on her health. Chief Kelly Rodebush was a Spartan. She earned her bachelor's degree here and her master's at Western Michigan University, joining our department as an officer in 1994. She served as a field training officer, canine handler, patrol shift commander, training and special events security coordinator, and as a threat assessment team commander before being named deputy chief. And it was my privilege to work with her in her role as chief when I first arrived at Michigan State. Today, I wanted to send my condolences and those in the entire university to her family, along with our gratitude for her dedicated service. And with that, I will conclude my remarks. We will next move to the gift, grant, and contract report. Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage.
Good morning. Chairperson Byram, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is November 16, 2021, through January 12, 2022. The total value for this period is $163,922,269.
Motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report.
So moved.
Thank you. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The gift, grant, and contract report is approved. Now we'll go to our research presentation.
Thank you. You know, it's always an honor to present our faculty and really demonstrate the excellence that we show across the many disciplines at the university. And today we're going to hear from Jason Roundtree. He's an associate professor in animal science at Michigan State University, where he holds the Charles Stewart Mott Distinguished Professor for Sustainable Agriculture. Roundtree holds an extension and research appointment where his focus is on identifying the metrics and management that reflects ecological improvement in grazing land systems. He conducts his research at the Lake City Ag Bio Research Center, along with the Upper Peninsula Research and Extension Center, where he also maintains a coordinator responsibility for that center. Since arriving at MSU in 2009, he's given over 250 presentations throughout the United States and around the world. He has also worked to co-develop with the Savory Institute an ecological outcome verification that is now being used on over 2 million acres of grasslands on every continent around the world. The ecological outcome verification has also been branded for products marketed by General Mills, Applegate, and many others. Roundtree has been a co-investigator or principal investigator on $27.75 million in funding to conduct research in food systems. He will also be the director of a new Center for Regenerative Agriculture at Michigan State University. His work in sustainability was featured in the movie Sacred Cow, and he has been highlighted in the Washington Post, New York Times, Forbes, and many other popular media publications. Please welcome Jason Roundtree.
Thank you, Dr. Gage.
Chairperson Byram, President Stanley, trustees, Provost, it's great to be here. And so I don't know if you may have seen the news this week, but Secretary Vilsack announced a $1 billion request for proposal to work in climate smart commodities, and as well to help create new carbon markets for agriculture. And I know some of y'all have been in the ag industry for a very long time, and so $1 billion is a lot of money for us ag folks. And I guess two questions come to mind. First of all is why. And if I were to estimate the why, our farmers and ranchers in this country work very hard. They've been pushed to focus on output over input. They're constantly having to shift with policies. And during that process, while we continue to produce food to feed the world, we simultaneously have seen degradation ecologically. Our landscapes have become more prone to desertification. We've had challenges with water quality. There are reports that we've lost well over half our topsoil in the United States because of farming. I never blame a farm or farmer for the actions they have to make, but it is a complex problem. And how do we address that? Would be the second question. And the answer in our work is regenerative agriculture. And if I were to define regenerative ag, I'm just going to use my title. It's improving the health and resilience of our land, livestock, and community. Regenerative agriculture is really not awfully complex in terms of the adoption of principles that drive ecological resilience in our landscapes. We talk about minimizing disruption. We want to keep our ground covered in all of our farms. We try to promote perenniality, living roots throughout the year, more biodiversity. We need to get more livestock back in our cropping systems. And then we also need to apply adaptive grazing. Dr. Stanley, you've walked my pastures with me, and I really appreciate you. And I think you maybe can kind of think about what you've seen and the things that we try to promote at Lake City. And so we really have some shovel-ready opportunities for Michigan agriculture and beyond that I think can address the challenges we have with water quality, resilience in our landscapes, and also make our farmers more profitable. But before I go forward, I just want to go back for a second. I'm a Spartan. I got my PhD here. I worked in the Department of Animal Science. I coached the National Champion Livestock Judging Team in 2000, and that's kind of our Super Bowl. My wife and I are both Spartan grads. I got my PhD. My wife, an undergrad, we're Texans. And as the gentleman alluded to earlier, we got this nice little banner in the mail this week, and we're awfully pleased to see that as well. So we're Spartans. We love Michigan. We miss Texas where we're from, but we are Spartans. And so I left Michigan State with a PhD ready to save the world. And the closest place to Houston area where I'm from was Louisiana. And I went to work in Extension. I didn't realize that in Extension, we were supposed to be first responders to food disasters. And I would expect y'all know which hurricane this was, Hurricane Katrina. We also got hit by Hurricane Rita that year in 05. And so here I was trying to do the regular research that I was taught to do and trying to expand the U.S. Beef production system. And this is what I actually inherited. Things like this. Isn't that crazy? Cows on front porches. This is actually after Rita. This person, I don't even think they got the new labels off their windows on this house. And so when these things hit, and they do hit, things go south in a hurry. And I really had a reckoning mentally on our farming principles. And I love, as I mentioned, our farmers and how we farm. And I think we do a really good job and take a lot of heat simultaneously. But the point is, I started thinking about resilience. And how do we begin to prepare farmers and agriculture to be more resilient through these challenges? How do we take CO2 from the atmosphere and put it back into the soil? And I've dedicated my life's work to this ever since. And so in 09, thankfully, I got to come back to my second home. And we're here in Michigan. And this is Lake City Research Center, where we do our work. We're right up southeast of Traverse City. We implemented a new adaptive grazing management program at this farm in 09. We quit fertilizing. We really tried to use what we call biomimicry. If you think about bison traversing the plains, and grazing and leaving, grazing and leaving. They may not come back to an area for a while. And what that recovery period does is it allows for more biodiversity, plant roots to get deeper. There's nutrients, there's manure and urine and hoof action and microbes and critters and all these things that are regenerating soils. And since we began adopting this approach, we've actually seen our beef production system, and despite what you read in the news, it's actually been a sink for carbon. And we've actually been able to publish this. Now, there's nothing perfect about it. There's challenges. But in this work, I also simultaneously learned that it's awfully difficult to measure carbon and water and ecological function at scale. And so I took what I've learned at our farm over the last 10 years, and I created a team. And we put forth to me from what I believe to be the largest grant to be put into grass and pasture lands in the United States, with an overarching goal of understanding the metrics, management, and monitoring of our pastures in the United States. Effectively, what we're hoping to do is to measure ecological function at scale. And by doing that, and to address that $1 billion RFP that Secretary Vilsack mentioned, is how can we bring big-scale monitoring to boer to inform carbon markets, to inform ranchers? And that's really what's driving us. We have partners, Colorado State and the Noble Research Institute are the two partners, and we put together over $19 million. The Foundation for the Future of Ag Research, Noble Research Institute, Green Acres Foundation in Cincinnati is actually the Gambles of Procter & Gamble, the Jones Family Foundation from Ann Arbor, and ButcherBox as well. And so we've been working in this space. I'm actually working to lead a group of over 50 scientists to see how we more aptly can take the management principles and scale this up to big technology and big time data and space. And so we're using the best technology we can. We're measuring CO2 cycling, we're measuring soil carbon, we're measuring watering with our Water Research Institute here at Michigan State. We're channeling all this data into the best known models that are out there today. We're trying to make new models and algorithms that can simultaneously in almost real time try to teach us what's happening with water and soil and carbon. And we're also simultaneously looking at the fact that we've got to understand the socioeconomics of these models as well. There's a farmer behind every acre, and for everybody in here, eating is an agricultural act. And so through this really integrated study, we've been able to do some great things. And so here we are with the remote sensing in space, trying to tie it down into local acres and local farms. And it's also, again, I just want to emphasize the fact that while we can understand these things that drive ecological function, we have to understand the social and economic drivers that will adopt these principles that can give more resilience to the state of Michigan and beyond. And that is also a real driver of what we're trying to do. And so that framework for this new $19 million project and hopefully more projects to come serves as the framework for a new center of regenerative agriculture. We want to see as many acres as possible in the state of Michigan and beyond adopted for the soil health principles and into a regenerative agriculture mindset. It isn't black or white. We hear a lot of black and white these days. This is a gradient. Life's gray. It's tough. And what we're trying to do is just get farmers and ranchers down that pathway of improving soil carbon sequestration, water quality, and water quantity throughout the U.S. We care about the nutrient density of our food. Hypothetically, if foods are growing on healthier lands, they should be better for us. So we're interested in human nutrition and nutrient density, value chain resilience, profitability, and then really getting down to the core of what we stand for as Spartans, social ecological resilience and community well-being. I'm not obviously doing this on my own, and the fact that I would like to say is I believe today we are leaders in agriculture and addressing the challenges of climate. We're working, this is just the group alone from Michigan State University that are working on this project. There are folks that have newly been put into the academy, as Dr. Stanley said today on this slide. And so we have a great team. I'm certainly excited about that. And as we move forward, I would like to also thank Dr. Gage. I would like to thank Ag Bio Research, Dr. Bueller, who's now over in this building, but as well George Smith, a colleague that I've worked with for many years, and also Dr. Tyler at MSUE. I think that we are going to move forward as leaders. I think we have these visions of what a farm of the future looks like, carbon neutral dairies, as well as our new greenhouses and other really important things that will help continue us to be leaders in agriculture. So with that, I'll quit. I don't know if y'all have any questions. Thanks for y'all's time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Dr. Roundtree?
I actually do. So first of all, Dr. Roundtree, I want to thank you very much for your presentation. You're speaking in an area that I have a lot of personal interest mm-hmm. in and get excited about it. And you also have, too, a College of Agriculture alumni on the Board of Trustees with Trustee Foster and myself. So just for a little bit of background. But recently the governor released her draft climate plan, mm-hmm. and a section of it is food and natural lands.
Yes.
I wondered, have you looked at that draft plan? Do you intend to provide any kind of comments? Comments are allowed through the middle of March this year.
I helped write it.
Okay. Good.
Thank you for that, though.
I would encourage you to.
I'm an ag guy, and I honestly, in full transparency, wish it was a little higher up that wish list, you know. But I think
there's opportunity, and I don't believe that really in the draft plan you had individuals on the climate task force that had a deep knowledge in agriculture. So the regenerative agriculture and the role it can play in carbon sequestration and reduction of greenhouse gases is important. So there's that.
Absolutely.
And then what also piqued my interest was the using livestock as part of cropping. And what do you see as the role of extension? And I ask this because I actually have on my calendar an appointment with the dean and George Smith, Dr. Smith, coming up to talk specifically about that, because carbon markets are one piece of it, but the other is how do you integrate livestock with cropping, more local food sources, and also it adds economic stability to some of these small farmers that may be landlocked and really are looking to how to make their farms more viable.
Great question, Chairperson Byram. Wendell Berry, longtime author, said that when he talked about crops and livestock, he said, we took the solution, we split it into two problems. And I tend to believe that when we integrate livestock back into these systems, it helps ecologically, it reduces nitrogen needs, it improves soil health, water infiltration. But simultaneously, we don't see many fences anymore in our cropping systems. And so there are these wonderful technologies. We're actually working with a company that has virtual electric fencing as an example, that are working to do those things. And we often say it's not the cow, it's the how. We often see beef on the cover of many of our publications that in a negative light. And so I think from an extension, we need to educate the consumer and more aptly say that this is a nuanced discussion. It isn't either yay or nay. And I think as we move forward, I think farmers should be compensated for adopting these principles, whether it through be these carbon markets or other ecosystem services. And by doing that, if the value in that payment is greater than the opportunity cost, I think we'll see these integrations happen better. But today, as you know better than I do, farmers are tasked with a tough profit loss statement every year. And so until we can get a farmer in a better place to adopt these things, I think it's going to be a challenge. When it comes to the small local food systems, I mean, you get in North Michigan, you see so many acres that are pretty underutilized. I think livestock have a great tool, and I've worked a lot with Don Coe, good old Don Coe up there, you know, at Black Star and others, as we've tried to expand those types of things over the years. And I think there's a great opportunity for smaller producers to adopt these grazing animals on their landscapes. There's a great demand for local food in the Traverse area, as you well know, and other areas. And we do also know that for every dollar spent in beef, there's it normally close to like a $4 or $5 multiplier. There's even work that General Mills done that would say by adopting regenerative agriculture, that multiplier is even higher. And so those things can really, I think, impact positively the economics of our state.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your work.
I appreciate it.
Pat has a question.
Trustee O'Keefe.
Yeah. Professor Roundtree, I'm interested. You were down in Katrina, and I went down there after the natural disaster and saw the water lines a foot above every house. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, what does a natural disaster like that do to the soil? And how does the farming community come back from that devastation?
It's tough. And I worked with one rancher that actually lost 600 cows in the storm. It's horrible, right? And the fact is that they were so far down south in New Orleans that the traffic and the log, he couldn't get them out. So that's one challenge, right, is you can't get them out. And so when we saw that saltwater innovation, it, you know, that it all came in, normally that's a brackish marsh. And most grasses are not salt tolerant, right? So what happened then is that it basically kills everything. Earth is resilient. And I believe that being a natural system, it adapts, it improves. And I did see another story that happened is that we saw this beautiful Bermuda grass pop up after the storm, and it looked great. And I got another call, and we went out there, and another gentleman had like 200 cows that were lying dead in a pasture from salt poisoning. And the grass looked great and everything, but there's all these challenges. And so when you get hit with these things, there's a lot of unintended consequences that can occur. And so the ways to get around that is fresh water, rain, you know, filtering. But I think also just trying to allow the soil to recover, to get the biology back in track. But it definitely can dramatically alter what can be planted for a significant period of time.
Thank you. Other questions? So what a great presentation. It was great seeing you in Lake City. I enjoyed that.
Yes. Y'all come visit, please.
Yeah. get ready to celebrate Founders Day tomorrow, what a nice way to think about Michigan State University and its founding and the ag roots, to think about the kind of work you're doing where satellite photos are being used essentially to take a look and really change the way we measure outcomes and have ways to do regenerative agriculture. So it's a great thing. And I think the multidisciplinary approach, which involves the social sciences, I'm sure, economists as well, I think, again, is the great things the multidisciplinary universities like Michigan State University can do. So thank you so much for emphasizing
that. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it. So we'll now move to personnel action and information report. Provost Woodruff.
Trustees, I present for approval the following actions on the February 2022 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the appointment of Eric Scorsese, PhD, Associate Professor in the Department of Agriculture, Food, and Natural and Resource Economics in the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources, and Director of the MSU Extension Center for Local Government Finance and Policy, for a change in appointment and title to Secretary and Chief of Staff to the Board of Trustees, effective February 1, 2022. Additionally, the action includes the recommendation of Kendra Spence Cheruvallo for the appointment of Dean of Lyman Briggs College. Dr. Cheruvallo has served as interim dean in the college since December 2020. I'm delighted that Dr. Cheruvallo will continue as dean and look forward to supporting her visionary leadership of Lyman Briggs College. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Thank you. Could I have a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing
none? Welcome to Eric.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I have a question. I thought Mike Zag was Chief of Staff.
Secretary and Chief of Staff
to the Board of Trustees. Okay.
Which is what I
clarification. Said. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. But I'd like to just say, Mike's like, no way do I want that job, yeah. Right? But welcome to Eric.
Welcome, Eric.
We all look forward to working with you. I just wanted to just say we're so excited, and I think no one's more excited than Brian Quinn to see you take over.
Any other discussion? So hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The personnel actions are approved. Now we will move to committee reports and other items requiring board approval. Trustee Melanie Foster will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, President Stanley. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board authorizes the administration to purchase the property located at 4035 East Jolly Road, Lansing Township in Ingham County, Michigan, for $700,000, and upon such other terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or his designee.
Do I have support for that
support.
Motion? Discussion.
Dan Bowman's prepared to discuss.
This is just a great opportunity for the university to increase its land holdings on South Campus in our agricultural district. It's a 20-acre parcel on Jolly Road that's literally surrounded by MSU land. So when this came up for sale by a private entity, we just thought it was a great opportunity to purchase that land. The university has actually been leasing 15 acres and farming it for quite some time already, so that'll negate the need to lease that land.
I agree. It's a great opportunity for the university.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board authorizes the administration to negotiate and execute a lease for space in the city of Flint for a term that may exceed 10 years and upon such other terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or his designee.
Could I have support for that motion?
Support.
Thank you.
Second.
Discussion.
Dan Bowman will comment on this, which supports our Flint initiative.
Sure. Yeah. The president can outline the yep. amazing gift from the Mott Foundation. So there's another piece of the story I wanted to highlight. The Mott Foundation also granted their development arm, the Uptown Redevelopment Corporation, $14 million to build low-cost research space to enable our researchers to inhabitate that. What that does, it allows us to get very favorable market and low market lease rate or rent rates for the long term to enable that research.
And this is in a building we already occupy in downtown Flint.
We occupy the Flint Journal building, which was another partnership with the Mott Foundation, and this will be in addition to the just to the south end of that building.
Very excited about this. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled Biomedical Animal Resources, Provision for Large Animal Imaging Clinical Center.
Could I have support for the motion?
Support.
Thank you.
Barb Krantz is prepared to comment.
This is the proposed renovations at the clinical center. We have an opportunity with space becoming available in 2023 with the movement of Spartan Imaging to the new McLaren Hospital. MSU successfully competed for an NIH grant that will fund the renovations at the clinical center, a $6.7 million grant. In addition to that, there will be imaging, state-of-the-art imaging equipment in the facility. Siemens Health Linears will be providing that equipment, which is valued at about $5 million. The renovations will, again, provide imaging for large animal clinical trials, research, and for training of our future biomedical scientists. It will support 6 colleges, 12 departments, and 6 programs.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with a project entitled Packaging Building Addition and Renovations with a project budget of $10,900,000.
Do I have support for that motion?
Support.
Barb Krantz will comment.
Okay.
Thank you. This project will provide an addition to the packaging building, which was originally constructed in 1964. It's about a 5,000 square foot addition. About 14,000 square feet of the existing building will also be renovated. It will provide workspaces, innovative learning space, and gathering commons areas for our students and faculty. The packaging program is actually the first, largest, and most comprehensive packaging school in the country. It supports a trillion-dollar industry and is a number one ranked program in the country. About 40 to 50% of the graduates are hired by industry and very well supported that way. The project, the $10.9 million budget, $10 million of that is provided by gifts. And a lead gift from Amcor Corporation of about $10 million, of which $5 million will fund half of the renovations and the other will go toward an endowed professorship.
Any other discussion? So it's an outstanding program and gathering both internal and external support.
President Stanley, just in terms of keeping our minutes accurate today, the last two authorizations have not had a second. and we're moving really fast. I think we should get support.
I think the resolution brought forward by committee requires just one support. So she moves it, and then when Diane says support, it has.
Are we getting it? Because it's not getting heard down at this end.
Oh, no,
ask the question to Brian as to whether or not we're getting the second on these and whether or not. And he said, we're not doing it, so we want to keep a good record. So if that's happening,
we're all getting it. We've had support.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, no, appreciate the clarification. So where are we? Do we need to vote on this still?
We're ready to vote.
We're ready to vote. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
Now this concludes my report.
Thank you. Now we will hear from the Committee on Academic Affairs, Trustee Byron.
Thank you very much. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves the revisions to policy 03-17-09. Discipline and dismissal of tenured faculty for cause, shown in Attachment A.
Do I have support for this motion?
Support.
Thank you.
I would like to turn it over to the provost so that she could give more extended comments on this faculty discipline and dismissal policy. Provost Woodruff.
Thank you, Chairperson Byron. I'm happy to speak to this matter regarding the revisions to the MSU discipline and dismissal of tenured faculty for cause policy. There are moments in the life of an institution that are defining. Today is one of those moments. By a vote shortly, the Board of Trustees will vote on revisions to the policy governing dismissal of tenured faculty for cause that had an historic unanimous vote from the University Committee on Faculty Tenure, University Committee on Academic Affairs, and the Faculty Senate. Unanimity is rare in the academy, so let me etch out not only what has been agreed to, but why it is historic. First, what was done. A task force impaneled by me last spring was charged to review the institution's discipline process and sanction structure to ensure clarity, appropriateness, consistency, and timely implementation of sanctions for violation of the relationship violence and sexual misconduct policy. The task force identified timeliness of the disciplinary process as a key barrier to ensuring a safe and respectful working and learning environment. To remove that barrier, the task force recommended streamlining the dismissal process to a 120-day timeline while ensuring due process. The task force also recommended the creation of a trained standing faculty hearing panel, which will be trauma-informed, have anti-bias training, and understand applicable legal guideposts. This newly revised discipline and dismissal of tenured faculty for cause policy and the associated process training have as bedrock academic freedom and due process. Tenets we defend, cherish, and are uplifted in this work. Finally, the task force identified and we committed to take into consideration all stakeholders and increase, where possible, transparency and communication. This action is intended to instill confidence in the community about the nature of this matter and remove troubling opacity. Finally, we will increase leadership accountability and responsibility, centering our work and actions. Each of these matters required deep thinking, consultation, and the work of a committee that represented the entire width of the university. On behalf of a grateful university, I thank Chair Suzanne Lang and all those who participated in further deliberations carried out by the University Committee on Faculty Tenure, University Committee on Faculty Affairs, and the Faculty Senate. I want to note particularly the work of Dr. Karen Kelly Blake, Faculty Senate President, Dr. Stephanie Anthony, Dr. Susan Barman, and Dr. Mick Fulton for their leadership. We also owe an institutional debt of gratitude to Dr. Rebecca Campbell and Detective Lieutenant Andrea Mumford for their scholarship and professional leadership that created an environment ready for this hard work. The institution also thanks the members of the Dean's Council who closely considered and fully endorsed these changes. Because of our land-grant mission and ethos, we are obligated to extend our learning and this work to the region, the nation, and the world. We must be part of a local and broad solution set so that tomorrow's universities are better than today's. So why is this historic? First, the courageous survivors in the MSU community demanded change, and we are heeding the clarion call to action with this vote today. The university is united in developing and applying best practices to our entire organization. We are educable even as we educate. Second, newly installed President Sam Stanley made a safe and respectful campus the number one priority of his presidency, which underpins each of our goals in student success and academic excellence. He then charged the campus with the development of a relationship violence and sexual misconduct strategic plan to chart a course forward. This RVSM strategic plan is aspirational and it is specific. Finally, MSU cannot undo the past, but it must do better in its future. And changing policy changes lives. Today's vote by the board completes the governance circle. February 11th, 2022 may be a little appreciated date on our calendar in the past, but I call upon all of us to remember February 11 as a fulcrum from our past to our collective future. Institutional courage and culture are built by people who believe in structure. Structure yielded to the will of the people, and the people were well served. While we are happy, we are not satisfied, and will continue to build a better, safer, and more respectful MSU. Well done, MSU, on this important step. MSU, the work is not yet done. Thank you, Chairperson Byron.
And thank you very much, Provost Woodruff. And without objection, President Stanley, I would request a record roll call vote on this motion.
Let me just ask first, is there any more discussion before we go to that vote? And let me just say, add my thanks to everyone who's involved in this process. And thank you, Provost Woodruff, for your leadership on this and your eloquence in describing the tremendous effort that went into this. So if there's no other discussion, then we'll have a roll call vote.
Trustee Byron?
Yes.
Trustee Foster?
Yes.
Trustee Konecki Jefferson?
Yes.
Trustee Kelly?
Yes.
Trustee O'Keefe?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Tebe?
Yes.
Trustee Vassar?
Yes.
Mr. President, the vote is 8-0.
Great. Congratulations. I'm going to applaud. Trustee Byron, you have some comments.
Yes. Yesterday at Academic Governance, we had an academic update by the Provost. And our commitment to student excellence is one of our top pillars in our strategic plan. And I just want to share what the Provost reported out yesterday. We're very proud of the fact that MSU has increased the graduation rate of undergraduate students every year for the last 6 years. And our graduation rate now stands at 82%. That's 9 percentage points higher than U.S. News and World Report predicts our students will graduate. That is, students at MSU, regardless of their economic background, their race or ethnicity, their hometown, their gender, their average grade, our graduates will graduate in rates 9% higher than they would have at other universities. So regardless of the background that our students bring to Michigan State, if you are accepted at Michigan State, our commitment is you will graduate from Michigan State. The value of an MSU education is rooted in Michigan State's commitment to access, equity, and opportunity, and in the excellence of our faculty, advisors, and academic staff. No other Big Ten university is more accessible and has a higher graduation rates than MSU. Students who choose to come to MSU and the communities from which they come are the beneficiaries of our sincere belief that every student we admit here has the capacity to learn, thrive, and graduate, and of our commitment to supporting every student to develop their purpose and their passions. This concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now hear from the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, Trustee Dan Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. President. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board reappoint Plant Moran as external top auditors for the 2021-22 fiscal year.
Do we have a support?
Moved.
Thank you. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approve the following: an option agreement with Portera Therapeutics, a sponsored research agreement with Portera Therapeutics, a service agreement with National Pesticide Safety Education Center, a lease agreement with Jolt Energy Storage Technologies, a licensing agreement with Jolt Energy Storage Technology, a sponsor service research agreement with Infrastructure Analytics Company, a sponsor research agreement with IASO Therapeutics, a purchase agreement with Sakon Plasma.
Can I have a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
That concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now hear from the Committee on Student Life and Culture, Trustee Brianna Scott.
Thank you, President Stanley. The board received an update on the MSU firearms ordinance and policy from Vice President of Public Safety and Chief of Police Marlon Lynch, and an update also on the Healing Fund. This concludes my report.
Thank you. Well, I'll now turn it over to Trustee Diane Byron.
Thank you. And it's the liaisons, right?
Yes.
The faculty liaison, would you have comments?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
I probably got another.
Good morning, all. My comments will be brief this morning. We want to thank Trustees Jefferson and Vassar for their continued engagement about the caregiving concerns of faculty. Thank you, Trustee Jefferson and Trustee Vassar. We appreciate the self-study work led by Associate Provost Lang that is taking place that will inform a university-wide caregiving initiative. Our own Vice Chair, Dr. Stephanie Anthony, is also part of that committee self-study work. We are encouraged by our meetings with the president and executive administrators regarding compensation restoration. We feel that our conversations have been productive and that we can achieve a collaborative solution. When we include the people affected by decisions and decision making, then we can move the needle forward, as clearly exemplified by the discipline sanctions policy that you all just voted on. That is the work of academic governance, and that is our work. We need diversity of thought and perspective so that we can understand the landscape at 30,000 feet and at ground level. Our job is to engage in this work together for the good and well-being of the MSU community. Our interests are indeed aligned. The tangible outcome of our work together is to fund sustainable comprehensive caregiving and to restore compensation. As always, we extend an invitation for the board to attend the Faculty Senate and University Council meetings. Trustee Vassar is the faculty liaison, and we appreciate and welcome her engagement in these spaces. Academic governance is a verb. It is the work we do. Let us do the work together. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Now we hear from the student liaisons.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sarah Hugentobler. I am the current president of the Council of Graduate Students, which is the representative body for the professional and graduate students. I am joined today by SMSU President Georgia Frost, RHA President Caitlin Bolton, and at-large Representative Maisha Johnson. I just wanted to give you an update for those of you that don't know. The Council of Graduate Students' mission is to support graduate and professional students in their social, academic, professional, and economic goals. To that end, this academic year, we've provided around 11,000 in professional development awards, around 6,300 in conference awards, and we just reopened our Working Remotely Technology Awards, in which we plan to provide around $4,000 in support for students to purchase technology so they can work remotely. I just wanted to give everyone a reminder as well that one of our largest events of the year is coming up on February 19th, our Graduate Academic Conference, which is an opportunity for graduate and professional students to present their research, as well as we have a three-minute thesis competition in which the winner of that competition moves on to the Midwestern Association of Graduate Students three-minute thesis competition. So we're very excited about that. ASMSU and RHA have also given me some updates that they would like me to share. ASMSU recently passed a letter concerning CATA and other transportation issues on campus. This is in response to many accessibility concerns that students have been having with CATA's new schedules. ASMSU understands that CATA's service changes are due to staffing shortages and other pandemic-related factors, but the concern is still there for students who need this transportation. As such, the CATA letter attempts to provide resources for students at this time. ASMSU is deeply appreciative of Chief Lynch's decision to extend the free pay-by-plate parking until March 6, but students are hoping the university remains engaged with this issue since the measure does not solve the issue in its entirety. This is something Georgia brought up to the board yesterday. ASMSU recently sent 9 student government members to the Association of Big Ten Students Winter Conference. There, ASMSU was able to work with other student governments to develop collective lobbying legislation. Historically, ASMSU has relied on other Big Ten student associations to make bigger strides in advocacy. At this conference, the Big Ten student governments passed legislation concerning carbon neutrality and divestment, anti-critical race theory state bills, accessibility beyond ADA compliance, a $15 hourly wage for student workers, calling for SNAP expansions to be made permanent, federal action on the Line 3 pipeline, supporting part-time lecturers, creating programs at our respective universities to combat heavy episodic drinking, working towards doubling the Pell Grant, and disqualifying room and board scholarships as taxable income. As you can see, this legislation ranges in topic, but address crucial issues for students. ASMSU is in the process of its own ratification of these pieces of legislation. Recently, ASMSU has passed other legislation concerning a mental health absence policy, a standard hazardous weather policy, base increases in state of Michigan appropriations to Michigan State, and a lower tuition cap. ASMSU also has a positive piece of information. At ASMSU's last General Assembly meeting, they appointed a representative for the Residential College of Arts and Humanities. Her name is Alisa Hakim. This is the first time that the RCAH has been fully represented in the student government in history. This is a great step forward for the college's representation. Now move on to the RHA updates. RHA is working hard to make the on-campus living environment the best that it can be. Our pieces of legislation that addressed more access to Sharps containers across campus and improving lighting across campus have been followed up with our housing partners. They thank both housing and other departments across campus for working with them to make our campus feel safer no matter what time of day. As of right now, the two crucial issues that our team and representatives are working on are the internet connection issues in the halls as well as the public spaces on campus. The second issue is the accessibility issue of the CATA buses. They are working diligently to create short-term solutions that they can do and ask that the administration do their part to support them and the students of MSU. RHA is in the midst of reevaluating the services that they provide. As their director of media entertainment would say, yes, here is another shameless promo. We are happy to announce that the new endeavor that will be implemented as soon as possible. They have renewed their past service known as RHA TV to become MSU TV, where they will be creating an entire TV station that is dedicated to helping students and showcasing student work. Their DME is currently filming and gathering content to put up. They encourage all faculty, administration, students, or even the Lansing community to submit content that they would like to share. To do this, please contact either the RHA president or our DME at her email, rha.dme@msu.edu. Also, feel free to tune in for great content. Yesterday, we as the student liaisons discussed several items to the board, including student burnout, transportation and parking issues on campus, and assignment due dates for university break days. After this conversation, we look forward earnestly to the follow-up from these matters. As always, Georgia, Maisha, Caitlin, and I are available to respond and promote student concerns, and we welcome engagement from the board, administration, faculty, and most importantly, students. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to say on behalf of the board that we appreciate your leadership and the time and commitment you give to your organizations to be part of academic governance. I know you have busy schedules, hectic lives, and this takes additional time. So we appreciate each and every one of you, and thank you. My comments?
Yes.
Okay, so now we'll move to chairperson's comments. First, on behalf of the Board of Trustees, I want to acknowledge those individuals who took time out today to speak during the public participation part of our meeting. I will not be addressing your concerns individually, but the trustees are listening to each of you, and your input is considered in our decision-making process. Thank you for taking time to join us today on this very snowy and cold morning. My heartfelt sympathies go out to the parents, family, and friends of Brendan Santo, who tragically lost his life while visiting our campus. Thank you to everyone who participated in the search, with a special appreciation or recognition for MSU Police Department, East Lansing Police, Oakland County Sheriff's Office, Mr. Ryan Robinson, and the hundreds of volunteers. Safety on our campus is a priority. The president reported in his comments the installation of new, at least temporary, fencing until permanent fencing can be put in place in sections along the Red Cedar River, and a new MSU public safety app, Safe MSU. The board also spent time during our work session yesterday discussing campus safety with Chief Marlon Lynch. This work continues, and we look forward to our continued partnership with the campus community and our public safety partners. I want to also highlight a conversation that the board had with the faculty liaisons yesterday concerning the work during our work session. And I want to specifically say to the faculty, the academic staff, and our staff, that the health and wellness concerns you have expressed are being heard. We know that your burnout is real. Please continue doing your best. We hear you, we appreciate you, and we are committed to continue working with you to address your concerns. I'd also like to extend my welcome to our new volleyball coach, Leah Johnson. Coach Johnson was introduced to the MSU community in two different events this past week. One was a press conference and then followed up that evening at the men's basketball game. We welcome her to our campus community. Her family was with her. And I also want to thank retiring Coach Kathy George for the 17 years of service she gave this university coaching the women's volleyball team. We have someone new sitting at our board table. We talked briefly about Eric Scarsoni during our personnel actions, but Eric, I want to officially welcome you. You've been, I think, on board for a couple of weeks now, and this is your first board meeting. But after a national search, Eric was chosen as our board secretary and chief of staff. So, and I also want to give a very big thank you, actually huge thank you, to General Counsel Brian Quinn for stepping in and being the interim board secretary. I know it's not a job he asked for, but he did it with excellent service and always a smile. So thank you, Brian. And Amanda Gao, she was, Amanda Gao? Well, Amanda was very helpful doing the administrative work, and she kept us both on track and organized so that we could conduct the search, of which the trustees did ourselves. So we very much appreciate her help. The president spoke about the public health program through the College of Human Medicine in Flint. This is a program that was established right around 2012. It was originally, I think it was a $12 million grant from the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation. The expansion of an additional $25 million is going to allow Michigan State to do extensive work in chronic disease management as well as mental health and addiction services. And the work we do through our public health school will allow us to duplicate those community-based models across Michigan and across the United States, and it really embodies our land grant mission. So I'm very grateful to the Mott Foundation for their continued support. February is Black History Month, and I encourage you to take time to participate in the many opportunities on campus to learn about the history, the history and the achievements and contributions of Blacks, Africans, and African Americans, and to engage in thoughtful discourse on difficult topics that are relevant to today's society. And some examples that are happening is the Sankofa Project hosted by the College of Education K-12 Outreach, special programming on WKAR like The Evening with Congressman James Clyburn, and the film Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, of which I might add the board watched together last night at the President's House. There's many performances through the College of Music, as well as the Dr. William Anderson Slavery to Freedom lecture series that's sponsored by the College of Osteopathic Medicine. And that's just a few of the many that are available. And I encourage everyone to take advantage of these opportunities. And I will just end by saying happy birthday, MSU, for Founders Day tomorrow. So that concludes my comments. Thank you, Mr. President.
You're welcome.
Comments from trustees. Trustee Kelly.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to welcome Eric to the new job. I want to echo the chair's comments with regard to Mr. Santo and his family. Our prayers and best wishes go out to them. I also want to make a comment with regard to the discipline and dismissal policy. I think it is a big deal that we were able to get that agreement, basically with all groups, the faculty, the administration, and the board working together. It doesn't always happen that way, and so it's a big accomplishment. And I want to thank the faculty and the provost in particular in getting that done. Lastly, I just want to make a comment. It's very difficult to make comments as board members with regard to public comment, and in particular with regard to the Swim and Dive program and the supporters. First of all, there's litigation out there, but more importantly, I don't want to create false hope. But I will say this, the board is certainly listening. We attended a Zoom call where we had information. The board continues to discuss it. I don't know that there's going to be a resolution, and that's the part of the false hope that I am referring to. But I, as one board member, and I can't speak for the other board members, will not hesitate to change my decision if the facts show that. I am not embarrassed to say that I made a mistake or if in fact, we did make a mistake. So that's my only pledge to you. I don't know if it's going to make a difference or if there's going to be a change, but it won't be because for myself that I'm somehow embarrassed about having made a mistake. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Trustee Foster.
I, too, would like to thank everyone for their public participation today. We do hear you. As chair of the Investment Advisory Committee, I would like to remind everyone that the Investment Advisory Subcommittee continues to support the decision the committee and our chief investment officer made in 2018 to no longer invest in fossil fuel companies or funds. The remaining private investments in the oil and gas funds that we are contractually committed to before 2018 now represent less than 2% of the entire common investment fund, and we expect that to be zero in the years to come. I'd also like to welcome Eric Sarsoni as our new
board secretary.
I'd also like to thank Lisa Frace, our first chief financial officer, of Michigan State University, and I'd like to thank President Stanley for committing to that new position about a year ago. Lisa's been here less than 9 months, and it became painfully obvious to us during the pandemic that we needed different budgeting models and different accountability. And Lisa has just really done a fabulous job in providing new models of information to the Board of Trustees. So I just wanted to recognize you for that.
I'd also like to thank Dr. Jason Roundtree for his work and, you know, simply stated, no farms, no food, right? So thank you. And also to recognize Kathy George for her fabulous career at Michigan State University as a coach and as a mother of a student athlete here on our campus. So best of luck to her in her retirement. Thank you.
Trustee Konecki Jefferson.
Thank you. So a few of my colleagues' remarks I will amplify, and I have a few comments on my own. So I also want to extend condolences to the Santo family and also to the family of Kelly Rodenbusch. I want to also thank Dr. Roundtree. I spent some time in Houston. I thought I recognized your accent, and so thank you for your presentation and the extraordinary work you do. And I guess we have heartstrings in Texas and Michigan together, so I appreciate that. And I also will say to all of the student advocates who came to have us think in very deep and important ways about our firearms policy, about our investments, and about reinstating swim and dive, I will say, too, that I hear you. And I will say, especially to swim and dive, and I'm sorry that a lot of your colleagues had to leave. I don't think this was announced at the beginning, but, of course, we can't, as trustees, respond immediately to public comment. We are able to now, and so I hope you will pass this on to them. I've been saying to the swim and dive folks, I hear you for quite some time, and now I'm also going to say I'm sorry. I'm sorry your program was cut. I'm sorry that it happened the way it did. And it's my hope, and again, not to give you false hope, but it is my hope that you will have the opportunity to meet with President Stanley, to meet with AD Heller, to hear, even if it is difficult news, to hear what it would take to have the program reinstated. You deserve to know what that is, even if it is something that ultimately, despite the incredible advocacy, the financial support that you have pulled together, and more, even if that's not enough to surmount the challenge of reinstating it, I think you deserve at least to hear what that is in a very straightforward and transparent way. And I wouldn't hesitate to join Trustee Kelly in changing our decision if the facts show us otherwise. So I want to make that clear. And then I would like to say just a little bit more about this incredible work of the task force that reviewed the MSU discipline process and sanction review. I think, in fact, I'm certain, the first meeting after we hired Provost Woodruff, we over Zoom, I shared with her. And I was sort of hoping that I had some sort of, you know, superpower as a trustee, that we could just have this policy immediately in place. I wanted it like, you know, can we do this in a month? Can we do this in a week? Based on, frankly, my lived experience as a faculty member here for a decade, what I had observed, I was here from 2006 to 2016. These were longstanding issues. What I was reminded of and learned more about when I reviewed the Nassar documents, and what I am continued to be reminded about when I review OIU reports, which is another obligation we have as the Board of Trustees. And she reminded me that although these are important substantive changes that are part of the work that this task force has done, process is also really important, that it couldn't be something that I could just mandate as a trustee on my own. And so I just want to thank you for your extraordinary leadership, because not only is it incredible to have unanimity amongst a bunch of academics, but it's incredible that you did this in a year. I mean, that is lightning speed for anything that I have witnessed in my entire life as an academic. So I just want to thank you for that. And this will be transformative for all of the reasons that the provost already described. But I think for me also really in helping to remove a culture of siloing that is not just about reporting and the process that we handle discipline and sanction review here, but will also impact many other cultural dynamics and how this campus works together in the future. So thank you for that extraordinary work. And then I also want to say thank you to Kate Birdsall for being here on behalf of the UNTF and representing all of the teachers who are touching the day-to-day lives of our students. That's incredibly important for our students' success. But it's also incredibly important. We spent a decent amount of time in our work session yesterday hearing about how important it is to be amplifying and elevating the incredible research that our tenured faculty are doing. And an important way that is supported is, of course, the work of all of the teachers that you were here representing. So thank you for being here today and for reminding us of that. And that is another area where increased transparency and uniformity across departments and colleges in terms of teaching loads and other policies that apply, I think, could be beneficial there. I think that's everything I have in my comments. And so thank you.
Trustee O'Keefe.
Thank you. Welcome, Eric. Happy to have you aboard. Thank you, Brian, for stepping in and doing a yeoman's job relative to the duties of board secretary. I want to thank all the people who spoke today. I truly believe that the college campus should be a fertile ground for breeding optimism, finding solutions, providing forgiveness when required, and generating hope. And you can't do that without the free exchange of ideas, interpretations, and debate. And I'm hopeful that through that process that we're going to be able to reconcile some of the issues that were raised today in the thoughtful commentary that we received. Switching gears, as many of you know, I've been very critical and vocal about the university's COVID-19 policies, and personally believe that we've overlooked a lot of meaningful data leading to confusing and inconsistent strategies for our students. And in my world, students are number one, and our safety of our community is important. I also acknowledge that setting such policies is difficult and carries much responsibility to balance the concerns of all constituencies who depend on such policies. But I want to point out a few inconsistencies that are troubling to me. We have fired employees with exemplary records who have worked remotely for 19 months because they are not vaccinated, even though they have no need to return to campus to fulfill their duties. Yet we filled Breslin Arena during the same period without a vaccine requirement. What is the purpose of such unnecessary coercion on an employee who just wants healthy babies, has studied the risk, and doesn't want or need the risk of side effects from the vaccine on having a family and can do her job remotely? Then we have a vaccine and booster requirement in early January as a condition to attend basketball games at Breslin Arena after no mask or vax requirement 2 weeks earlier for the 16,000 Spartans who witnessed our basketball team play Oakland University at Little Caesars. But then we force our students who are vaccinated to go virtual, no matter the size of the classroom. Perhaps if this was a necessary step for students in the classroom, it should have been necessary for students in the arena by withholding fan participation. One could surmise that COVID doesn't exist in Detroit, but is running rampant in East Lansing, but neither of those would be true. We mandate vaccines to our students, including boosters, telling the students that vaccines and boosters are safe. We mandate this in light of the well-documented lack of death risk from COVID-19 on our student-age population and known issues from the vaccine and boosters for women who can face adverse consequences from the vaccine to their reproductive organs. We do this under the guise the shot is safe because the CDC and NIH tell us so. Yet, we accept a $475,000 NIH grant to study the negative effects of COVID-19 vaccine on women and their menstrual cycles. Dr. Mesmer, who is performing the study, notes, we need to get answers for women and their healthcare providers. We don't know what the answers will be, and that's why real data and scientific investigation are important. I can't imagine that we study things we already know, like the sun rising in the east or setting in the west. This obviously inconsistency and lie about the safety, in my opinion, should be criminal. But there is great benefit to blindly following Dr. Fauci, since he holds the NIH purse strings, which research universities depend on. Does anybody wonder, with all these great university research centers, that nobody in the United States is studying treatment and prevention like they would for other diseases? We are asked to believe that there is no other solution or treatment for COVID than a vaccine, which is contrary to the scientific research almost everywhere in the world. So as a university, we provide a mandate. Obviously and admittedly, as evidenced by our study, not knowing the risk and follow Dr. Fauci's guidelines so we can curry favor with the very organization he controls that doles out research dollars. Does anybody here see a conflict? We talk about protecting women. We have all kinds of policies, OIE investigations, and then we issue a mandate saying the drug is safe. But that assertion, we really don't know is true. But we'll study it later. I am sorry, ladies, but under this administration and any research university in the United States, Michigan State is not alone in this. NIH grants appear to be obviously a higher priority than your health, but we'll let you know after Dr. Messmer's study so you can unvaccinate yourself. Thank you.
Trustee Scott.
Well, being an attorney, I want to kind of rebut some of the things that my colleague just said, but I got court at 11 o'clock, so I'm going to be brief. I would just state that not everything that someone says is true. Just because someone says it's true, we should all, you know, research things ourselves. And I would also say we're not beholden to NIH grants over student health. That is just completely absurd to even make such a statement. And that's with all due respect to Trustee O'Keefe, who I truly respect and like very much. I will move on to state that, as my colleagues before me have stated, I am very committed to swim and dive to the continued conversations with them and to see if there is some solution that we can make. I will state that during our work session yesterday, we spent quite a bit of time talking about this, and some of our trustees very passionately advocating on behalf of swim and dive. We certainly want to provide the opportunity for those that wish to have the ability to at least speak their truth and discuss, you know, what their desires are as it relates to swim and dive to our AD as well as to the president. And I'm hopeful that that will happen in the near future. I would also like to acknowledge those that came up and spoke concerning the divestment of fossil fuels, and I really can just feel the passion. I've never been an environmentalist where I've understood things as well as you all have, but it certainly has caused me to want to look into some of the issues that you brought up and to learn more about it. And so I appreciate the passion that you all bring to this conversation. And I will state that for the record, I do agree with my colleague Trustee Foster in that if we do have commitments, we do have to follow through with those. But I want you to understand we are moving forward in the vein in which I believe you all are so passionately telling us we need to in order to safeguard our planet. So thank you. I would also like to acknowledge those others that have spoken to us today. The firearms issue is something that is extremely important to us. We had a robust conversation about that yesterday. We certainly understand the position that you all have taken. We do listen to our general counsel most of the time. And when he advises us on a certain position that after we have researched it ourselves, we think it's better to kind of hold back on, we're doing so. But it's not because we don't agree with you. We do just want to make sure that we are doing things procedurally in a way that makes most sense. So I hope that you understand that we I don't think any of us disagree with the position that you all have made. I want to extend my condolences to the family of Brandon Santos. Having a child who was a student here at MSU, I couldn't imagine, you know, as a parent, you send your children off to college, you allow them to go on other campuses to enjoy the college experiences, and then to lose a child. I just can't imagine that feeling. But out of this comes the ability for us to start to think outside of the box a little bit about how we can safeguard against this happening in the future. And so it's unfortunate that this occurred, but I am glad that we're doing some things to try to make sure that it doesn't occur again in the future. So my sincere condolences to the family. Also with our former chief of police, Kelly Rodebush, I am just so sad to hear about her passing. I recall prior to her retirement going to the museum, I think we had some kind of function there. I can't remember what we were partying about, but it was something fun, and I got to sit with her and her husband, I think, at that time. We were talking about her
her life, her legacy here at MSU and her leaving, and she just gave so much to this university. Those of us that had the opportunity to get to know her prior to her leaving, I think we were all blessed from that relationship, and I just want to extend my condolences, thoughts, and prayers to her family as they are going through this time. Black History Month, this is like my favorite month, but I'm going to like not say a whole lot about it because I know my colleague Vassar down there is going to probably bring it home for us. So I'm going to just state that last night was such an awesome opportunity for me to just be so proud of where and how MSU, let's start with how, we were trailblazers in the effort to bring African-American athletes onto this campus. It was a history lesson for me. I did have a glass of wine, but I still was able to pay attention to a lot of those details and understood the importance of what it was that Duffy Daugherty did back in the day. I would encourage each and every one of you, if you have not already done so, to watch that documentary on the banks of the Red Cedar. It was, to me, just awesome. I feel like it should be like required video for any of our student athletes that come onto this campus, although I doubt that's going to happen. I still think that it's important for people to know who made it possible for many of us of color to do what we do on this campus and the things that they went through during that time period. It's just unfathomable, but we know that because of their courage that we are where we are today. And I just want to thank the documentary, the people that created the documentary, and also my colleagues for being willing to sit around and kind of bond with one another, all but one of us, to talk about it and really to understand the importance and the history that MSU had in sports. I would also like to just thank our provost for her leadership as well. I mean, we have the provost that to me is probably one of the greatest provosts we ever could have had. Not only is she hyper intelligent and very intimidating to those of us that aren't, but she is very passionate about her job and passionate about those that she serves, those that she advocates for with our faculty. And as I think it was my colleague, Trustee Kelly, stated, or perhaps it was Trustee Kanaki Jefferson, the fact that you were able to do what you did in such a lightning speed speaks volumes. And I just want to thank our faculty and everyone that was engaged in that process. It is probably one of my proudest moments as a trustee to have been able to have that roll call vote today. So thank you so much for your leadership in that. I want to also talk to our faculty and our students. We talked about the faculty burnout, but we've got student burnout, we've got administrative burnout. We've all got burnout, right? So COVID has been, I'm sorry, I'm talking so long, and I do have court at 11 o'clock. So I let me just say that we are so very appreciative of every single one of you. We talked yesterday about even doing something that we can to show our appreciation to our faculty. And I hope that as colleagues, we continue that conversation and don't just do nothing because we want to celebrate you all. You all have done and sacrificed so much, but have done so much as well to make sure that this engine keeps running. And we are greatly indebted to you all. And so we want to celebrate you, and I believe we will come up with a way to do so. And thank you to our students for hanging in there because we know that this has been rough for all of you as well. And then lastly, I just wanted to, I don't know what I was going to say. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Trustee Tebe.
Thank you, Eric. First, I want to welcome Eric to be our new board secretary. We're excited to have you on board. And again, want to give my thanks to Brian Quinn and also Jackie for all of the work that you guys have done as we look to find a new board secretary. And I'd like to acknowledge Kate. I can't see you because Dan Bowman's head is right in front of you. Kate, thank you so much for coming. I appreciate you bringing our non-tenure track faculty's voices to the table continuously, and I'm committing to continue to work with you to make sure that they are supported and that their voices are being heard. So thank you for coming today. For all of those that came in support of Swim and Dive, I'm sad that I think all of the students have left. Oh, there's one. I see. Yes, one's still here. So please extend my
thanks for you to speak and also your colleagues and those that have come in support. And I see Michael, who I've had many conversations with, Sophia's dad. I'm committed to continuing to have these conversations and continue to work on finding solutions, and I appreciate all of you being here this morning and getting up super early to be here, to have everyone see you all and to see that you're all still here and that you're still Spartans and you're still fighting, and I appreciate each and every one of you, so thank you. I also want to thank the Sunrise Movement students for coming as well and continuing to push. I think it's important what you do, and I think it's important that you continue to question and to demand better from all of us. And so thank you for your work. And I know how much time you all put in into what you're doing on top of being students. And so thank you for continuing to do that. And then also Kate and Mara and Mason, thank you guys for coming. I already told my colleagues yesterday I'm 100% in support of changing this policy, and so I will continue to work with each and every one of you to help get 7 more votes to change this policy. So thank you all for, again, coming this morning and speaking to each of us. And then I just want to give condolences for Chief Rodebush as well. She really was a special person here on campus, and I, like Brianna, got a chance to know her a little bit before she wasn't there, and she does leave a legacy, and just my condolences to her family. And that's all I have today. Thanks.
Trustee Vassar.
Now that I have to give a whole dissertation on Black History Month, thanks to Trustee Scott.
No pressure.
So I agree with most of everything that was already said, so I'm not going to repeat or echo or reiterate or amplify. I'm just going to go with my own remarks. Happy New Year. Happy Black History Month. Happy Valentine's Day. Lots of reasons to be happy. Lots of reasons to be happy on this cold morning. So first, Dr. Birdsall, I just really want to extend to you another invitation to have a meeting with me. I appreciate you coming today, and I'm always open to have another conversation with you. And I do know that faculty, full-time, tenure-track faculty, are in solidarity with you, and so ways that I can connect you with Dr. Kelly Blake also would be helpful, I think. So please do. We've talked before. Just come on back. And then I'm just happy and grateful for students. I love to listen to students, and I deeply appreciate your passion, your resolve, your leadership, your spirited speeches, your well-written remarks. I found them finger-looking good. They were completely enthralling. So I do apologize to Mara. I know you just give that, you know, grace, but names are important, so I'm sorry your name was mispronounced. I do that all the time, so I'm going to do that later in a minute to Savitri. Yeah, so I apologize in advance for that. No, you should correct me when I mispronounce it later. And then I do want to say that ASMSU, I appreciate your work as well, your advocacy and your political engagement. Especially, I thank you for standing up for academic freedom, which is being attacked. You know, across 29 states, we're having these attacks about censorship and what you can learn and what you're exposed to on campuses. So I just appreciate that. And I also appreciate, Dr. Stanley, your solidarity with HBCUs. I think that's really important. I was really heartened by your remarks today, so I appreciate that too. I do want to say that our strategic plan across the whole spectrum of planning centers diversity throughout it, right? Every vision, objective, goal, every decision has diversity within it. MSU as a land-grant institution has decided that that's important. As a member of a minoritized group, several minoritized groups actually, I notice diversity. I notice diversity of thought. I notice diversity of opinion, perspective, experience. I notice all kinds of diversity. And I also notice when it's not there. Not just one that I can phenotypically see, but when I see groupthink, right? When I see a lack of variety and myriad ways of thinking in terms of our decision making. I notice all of that. And I'm going to push us this year to be better. Noah talked about this. He used that word incremental. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about incrementalism and the danger in trying to go slowly when things need to go quickly for justice to be done. And so I'm going to continue in a different way this year to engage this very important topic. I notice I'm very, very quiet and astute, but quiet. And I think you'll see that I'm not as quiet this year. It's an emergency. We've seen that higher education and K-12 education can turn on a dime when it's an emergency, when lives are at stake. And there are lives at stake. And so if we can decide on a Friday to close whole schools by Monday to save lives, some of these decisions that we're making that have life-changing, life-altering, life-deciding implications can be made too. These decisions can be made with the same kind of vigor and emergency and urgency. So I'm going to be a little bit more vocal and insistent in terms of diversity in different ways. So I also want to just say that, Mr. O'Keefe, I appreciate your concern for my ovaries, too. By the way, you just continue to have a concern for women's reproduction. And the allyship that you've given in terms of diversity has not gone unnoticed. I appreciate that and your concern for ovaries. So I do want to say that I do recognize that all students and faculty and staff and administration are fatigued, right? Overburdened, overtaxed. So I do want to admonish you just in recognizing the students, and this is where I'm going to mess. Well, tell me your name so I don't.
Savitri.
See, I messed it up. Savitri. So I recognize that we're all, you know, fatigued in this. But Savitri and her peers come with this kind of passion, right? So I just admire the tenacity, right, in pursuing that which inspires and motivates and propels you to move, right? We should all be so fortunate. So while we weather the dreary, overcast days of winter ahead of us, find energy, especially joy, in a cause, a hobby, or an activity that you can carry you through with a smile till spring. Be gentle with yourselves and one another. Extend grace, love, and in every single moment that you can, grab happiness. And remember to rest. Rest without guilt, remorse, or worry. Please just remember to rest. Take good care of your health and be well. Go green.
Go white.
That's all. So on those very wise words, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Second.
Second.
Support.
We won't even go through the vote. We're adjourned.
Done.
Nobody's writing anything down, I'm telling you.